UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
McLean, you're listening to ESPN 680 at 105.7.
Time now for an ESPN Louisville Sports Center update.
Good afternoon. I'm Nick Valvano. This Sports Center update brought to you by our friends at Wing Zone. Try the ESPN Louisville special, 10 boneless wings, wedges, and a drink for $9.39. Order online at wingzone.com. UK football announcing three future matchups with Toledo, including hosting the Rockets in 2025 and 2028. The Cats, they're also scheduled to head to Toledo in 2027. But what about this year? Stadium's Brett McMurphy joined Bob Valvano a little earlier today on the V Show, talking about his predictions for the Cats in 2019.
But I think, you know, I think a seven win, eight win is probably what they're looking at. Certainly, I think the key for Mark Stoops is, bottom line, just get to six and get to a bowl game. And then, you know, kind of rebound the next season, because I don't think anybody's going to be really surprised that they will regress a little bit this year.
Staying in BBN, the Cats, they lose out on five-star Deshaun Nix, who headed to UCLA yesterday with Mick Cronin. This coming after he announced UK in his final five. Yet, despite all this, Nix never really received an offer from Kentucky. One reason, perhaps, have no fear, BBN. Cal is targeting other top guards. That according to Evan Daniels, who was on earlier today with Lachlan McLean.
You know, they've targeted some other really good guards. Keep in mind, I think they're right there with Josh Christopher, who I think is the nation's best scorer. I think they're one of two schools in strong play for Jalen Green, who is more of a combo guard. So they're right there with two of the nation's top 10 players in the country.
More recruiting with Paul Biancardi joining Bobby V at 2:15. Baseball, the Reds, they're up 4-1 on the Padres after four. This is SportsCenter. Hey!
Broadcasting live from the Papa John's studios, keep it locked on the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Listening to the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Let's see what we got here. Some texts about the Rexy Karma situation that always strikes a nerve with some people. Did you? We want to know Wednesday.
We want to know Wednesday.
Radio people. Did you know wearing headphones for just an hour increases the bacteria in your ear by 700%?
Is that why there's so much wax and crap when you get done?
It is. Yeah, it absolutely is.
Ew.
I did know this. Baseball historians would know this, that Fred Tony of the Reds and Jim Hippo Vaughn of the Cubs pitched the only dual no-hitters in baseball history. Both pitchers, no-hitters. Same game.
Errors and stuff.
No, I don't think they finished. I don't have to look that up. I don't know how the game ended, but I do know that I happen to be listening to an old broadcast, as I do, and they referenced that during the broadcast. It was more contemporary news during this broadcast because the game was from – there's some really great games to listen to from literally 60, 70 years ago. I mean, people that you've just read about that you could never have seen. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Let's go see here. Games, a double no-hitter. This is, let's see, I'm trying to find the date. It was, no, that's not the one we're looking for.
Has there ever been a double knockout in boxing?
I don't know that.
A la, you know,
like
Rocky
in the cartoons?
II. Well, yeah, that, and then like Rocky II, where they both kind of topple to the mat, and then Rocky barely beats the 10 count or whatever. I think that's how Rocky II ended.
Hippo Vaughn of the Cubs and Fred Tony of the Reds were two of the better pitchers of their day. It was from over 100 years ago now. That's the beauty of baseball. They got documents, records, record-keeping for over 100 years. It was 1917. So I shouldn't say this broadcast was more contemporary. It was a game I was listening to from the 50s, so it was hardly contemporary. That was still 33 years in the books, but not 102 years as it is now. It was a chilly May day, and they did not allow a hit on either side through the ninth inning. Vaughn would lose his no-hitter immediately in extra innings. With one out in the 10th, he gave up a single, got an out, and then he got a routine fly ball that should have ended the inning. Instead, the outfielder dropped the ball, and then Jim Thorpe, of all people, the Olympian, came up, and he wound up grounding out to the mound. Vaughn threw home.
I thought he played football.
He played football. He played baseball. He was he is a cartoon character of athletic achievement. He was a.
I mean, I always heard that about him. I thought it was just football.
A world-renowned track and field person. He played football. They give awards in his name in football. He also was a Major League Baseball. Oh, by the way, in his spare time, a Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's one I didn't
scary.
Know.
Yeah.
Did he play hockey?
He was so
no.
fast
Nerd.
that when he grounded to the mound, rather than throw to first to try and get Thorpe out, he threw it to the catcher, and the ball hit him in the chest, and the guy scored. And then I guess while the catcher was so dumbfounded, another guy scored, and that ended the inning. But nonetheless, the other pitcher completed his game, retiring the side in order, and that means that Tony pitched a no-hit game and was the winner, while the other guy pitched a nine-inning no-hitter, but then lost an extra innings. And it was not unusual back then, as you know, to have pitchers pitch well into the extra innings. So there you go. So 102 years ago. By the way, we let a day go by that I'm really disappointed that we didn't commemorate in some way. Not that I had anything to do with it, but it was the 50-year anniversary of Woodstock
a few days ago.
And there were a whole bunch of things going on about that and interviews
How
and
old
stories.
Were you? I was
12.
Smart,
yes. I had no it scared me more than anything else. You got to remember, first of all, I was a very frightened kid. Secondly, the 60s were extremely, extremely violent time. I mean, when you're a little kid, I know this makes no sense to any of you perhaps, but when you pick up the newspaper and I came out of first grade and the little kindergartners were standing and they said, "You hear the president got shot in the head?" And we looked at each other and we said, "Oh, stupid kindergartners, they must have seen a cartoon or something." Then we got home and yes, the president was shot in the head, which scared the crap out of me. Why? I have no idea. You're a little kid. Then you were watching TV and Lee Harvey Oswald, the guy who killed the president, was himself killed on national TV live. Jack Ruby, they're showing him transporting from the jail to wherever he was going. I don't know. He was being transported somewhere and a guy comes out and kills him. And I'm five and I'm watching the president just got shot in the head, six. I watch the guy get shot on live television. 4 years later, the president's brother gets shot and gets killed. Martin Luther King gets shot and gets killed. And there's riots in the streets. I mean, massive, massive rioting. The Bronx was burning. The Watts was rioting. And so I had no idea why 500,000 people were going to go to this farm in upstate New York. But anything that seemed strange did not do much to settle my little 10-year-old head at that point. I was looking for nice and normalcy. And the video pictures they had there of people soaking wet, covered in mud, naked very often. So, you know, it was like, this isn't like Ozzie and Harriet. This is not at all like that. So I can't say that I was like, oh, that's so cool. But in hindsight, now I look back on it it's an extraordinary, extraordinary event in human history. It just happened spontaneously, basically. Dangerous as you think back on it now. As hot as it was, they didn't have a lot of basic necessities and but a very interesting story, nonetheless. It was the making of Carlos Santana's career, evidently, because his band was like the highlight of the act. If you ever get a chance, you should listen to John Fogerty from Creedence describe playing there. Hilarious. But he does it as part of his concert sometimes. He's done it on talk shows. It's really funny. So anyway, let's see. What are we doing here? What are we asking me? That's a great question, by the way. That's a great trick question. Who was the last American League MVP that was a switch hitter? It was actually the pitcher Vida Blue. See, that's true. That's, it catches a lot of folks by surprise there. I believe Nick said, is it Travis we got here? Travis, welcome in. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, Bob? Hey, I want to get your take on something. Did I just hear that Louisville just missed out on the number one point guard, Dejon Nix?
No idea. I'll ask Bean Cardi.
On the ESPN update, Dejon Nix, the new point guard, the number one point guard, Louisville missed out on him?
As I said, no idea. Nick, did you mention something in an update about the Knicks, a point guard that Louisville didn't get or something?
No. UK missed out.
Okay.
On but he never really had an
offer. Oh, that's
offer.
The kid you're talking about, the same kid. Yeah, the kid that went to UCLA. Oh.
Yeah, he went to UCLA, but he never had an offer. But you know who has more information on that?
Yeah, well, okay.
Pauly B.
All right. So
on line three.
All right.
That rhymes. Pauly B.
Why did you say it was Louisville? We didn't say Louisville.
Unless I did, I don't think I did. But if I did,
I was just thinking that, you know, Louisville hadn't offered him either at Kentucky, so they both missed out on him, didn't they?
Yeah.
He went to UCLA is the bottom line.
Yeah.
All right.
But Evan Daniels was on earlier with Locke. He's got his recruiting guy. We have our recruiting guy.
Yeah. We got a Paisan and none better. But the thing I want to talk to him about, though,
new rankings, too.
Paul Biancardi joins us right now here on ESPN 680-1057. And Paul, the thing I wanted to ask you about before getting into what it means for Kentucky and everything else, how about Mick Cronin? I mean, that was the one question you had. Is he going to be able to go recruit at UCLA? He doesn't play a system that is particularly, you know, exciting to kids. It's very defensive-oriented. And here he's in la-la land, you know, L.A., old Lakers days, Showtime. Is he going to be able to attract top talent? And that's a pretty good get for his early tenure, is it not?
Oh, it's a great get, Bobby. When he took the job at UCLA, shortly thereafter, Mick and his staff, you know, they really put the target on Dejon Nix, and it paid off because they needed a point guard desperately. They have a team that can score the ball, but they don't really have a point guard at that level that could lead. This kid's really good, one of the best passers in the high school game, strong, 6'4", 6'5", makes shots, and he's got the ability to break you down off the bounce. Great get for Mick Cronin. When Mick got the job, I said this before on whether it's TV or .com, I thought it was one of the better hires.
Did you really?
Yes, because he's going to win, and that's what they hired him for. Now, to what level, what degree, is he going to go to three consecutive Final Fours like Ben Holland did? Probably not. We may not see that in our lifetime again, but Mick Cronin's going to win. He won at Murray State. He won at Cincinnati. Now he has all the bells and whistles in terms of location, history. He's got a lot going for him out there. The fan base, I don't know if that's ever going to change, but he's got the glitz and the glimmer, and then he's got a Power 5 conference. I think he's going to do exceptionally well.
That's an interesting point you make, by the way. We'll get back to the recruiting thing, but how much – I mean, they should have a statue for Ben Howland out there, and he couldn't even survive.
They should.
I mean, three Final Fours in a row, we may never see that again.
And guys coach their whole life. You have friends in the business. I do, too, and we talk to them all the time, and they're you know, one round or two rounds away from a Final Four. Not only did he go to three, but consecutive.
That's what I mean.
It's so hard to imagine they got tired of him and his program went a little bit off track and things didn't work out at the end. And so, but Mick's really, he's better than solid. He's good. And he has a chance to make UCLA great again.
Now, I like Mick. I've known, obviously, since he was an assistant here. I always liked him. I've covered his games in Cincinnati. He's always been good to me. So I make no bones about, full disclosure, I like the guy and I'm rooting for him. There are some guys, though, that you just wonder if they're not, you know, perfect fits. And, like, I mean, Gene Bartow was as classy a gentleman as there ever was and a brilliant coach. And he did not fit at UCLA for various reasons. He was 55-9, basically, I think, and they ran him out of town. So that's what I just wondered, if he was going to be, you know, he was ready for L.A. Mick doesn't strike me as a glitz and glamour kind of guy. But you're right, winning answers a lot of questions.
It does. And I'll tell you another really good hire, I think, and what we'll find out in a couple of years. But I like Mike Anderson at St. John's.
Do you
really?
I really
do. Wow. I do. I know he's not from there, and I know he has no connections there, but he did hire a staff
that is very well connected in New York. I think he's going to win. I think they're going to love his style of play. And they were in desperate need of somebody who's run a college program before. And, you know, the last guy who did a great job, I thought, he went to postseason play, was our guy, Steve Lavin. I mean, he brought them back from being in the dead, in the graveyard. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out at the end. But he got him into the NCAA tournament and the NIT. Prior to Steve coming, they had no postseason taste at all. So St. John's is a fickle place, but I think Mike Anderson is going to be better than people think there.
Well, he's another guy who's a pretty good guy. Again, I don't know him as well as I know Mick, but he seems like a good guy, so I wish him well. St. John's where I grew up, and it's hard for people to understand. You were in the Big East, so you in this part of the country, I don't think they quite understand what St. John's means to that part of the country. In college, it is not a college town. It's a pro town. It's Knicks, it's Nets, it's Rangers, it's Yankees, it's Mets. But the one team that always broke through in that cluttered landscape was St. John's. And you ask people, Rick Pitino said he would have taken that job. My late brother said he would have taken that job. If you're from New York, there's something very special about St. John's.
You hit it on the head, Bobby. And Louis Carnesecca, you remember, he's the one who really got it going to the point where they were a dominant team, top 10 team in the country at times when I was in the Big East.
Yep.
And New York made room for St. John's. And it hasn't shined as bright since then.
All right, so we've got the new ranking database has come out at ESPN 100, and of the top five players, two are signed already. Evan Mobley, of course, with USC, and then Jalen Johnson went to Duke. Cade Cunningham is number two. Jalen Green is number three. Zaire Williams is number five. What movement of players in this that should jump out at fans got your attention? What would be the newsworthy things of this latest release of the list, other than of course Knicks going to UCLA?
Right. Well, when you look at the list, that it's coming down to their senior year, and Evan Mobley held on to the number one spot. He's a 7-footer. His dad is on staff at USC. His brother is a freshman there, and he's going to be the next great player at USC because he's a 7-footer with skill and mobility. You know, he's today's type of player in terms of athleticism, skill, versatility, coordination, mobility. So, and to hold on to the number one spot each cycle says a lot about Mobley and Cunningham right behind him and Jalen Green. Those have been the top three guys in this class, and that's been the race for number one. The kid Jalen Suggs, you see him at number six. He was at 12, had an unbelievable summer, and from Minnesota, so he cracked the top 10. I thought that was huge because anytime you crack any top 10 list, you're having a good time for yourself. And then there's some guys who've come into the rankings. Those guys moved up. So it's just a collection of talented kids that now have to make their decision as they become seniors. I really like this class, Bob, and think about this for a minute. Anthony Edwards, who's at Georgia now, was in this class. Nico Mannion, who's now at Arizona, was in this class. And Oregon just had two kids commit late from this class, Dante Nfali, 7-footer, and Addison Patterson, the top 50 kid. So and the kid R.J. Hampton, who went to New Zealand. So this class was stacked with those guys, but I still like this class a lot. I like this class better than the freshman class right now in college basketball.
Do you really? That's interesting. That you know, we and you make a great point. We're talking to Paul Biancardi from ESPN here. I mean, Mike Pratt's made that case. You know, the year that Kentucky, their one down year, if you want to call it that, under Cal, when they went to the NIT, they still had like the number one or two recruiting class. And Pratt likes to point out all the time, not all recruiting classes are created equal. So the number one class from one year is a lot different than the number one class from the next year. So as we look at these ensuing years, how do they shape up with relative strength? The 2019 class that's here now, next year, the year after, give me a lay of the land for how they stack up overall in terms of overall strength.
Well, I like 2019 because that's their freshman right now, and that's led by James Wiseman. I like that class a lot. In fact, I like it better than the Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett class because that class with Romeo Langford, if you remember, it was really top-heavy, and then it kind of wilted down and watered down. 2019 was much stronger.
And this class of 220 is even better than that. I think I had a hard time putting a top 10 together. When you have a problem trying to find 10 guys for the top 10 and you have 15 to 18 really good choices, that shows you the star power in the class. And as I look down the future classes, 2021, 2022, they look really good right now. But 219, very good in college basketball with Wiseman, Anthony Edwards, and a bunch of other guys. But this senior class, we'll have them on ESPN this year on TV, and we'll have them on .com. I think it's very, very exciting. And I know, Kentucky got a couple of those guys in B.J. Boston and Cameron Fletcher.
Hey, speaking of the recruiting, which obviously is what we focus on with you, is there any chance they re-examine the calendar? Because I understand the coaches were really pissed off about this new recruiting calendar. What do you make of that?
Well, they made a calendar where they put NCAA camps in the third week of July. The problem is they didn't get the talent to show up to the camps.
Ah.
So if you're Chris Mack or John Calipari, there was little to nobody there for you. And a lot of other Power Five schools as well. So the calendar, under my understanding, is it's going to stay the same in terms of the dates. They're going to have the NCAA camps again. Now, I will tell you this. USA Basketball had a training camp at the same time as the NCAA camps. That took away a lot of good players. A lot of the grassroots programs kept their good players and still played out in Las Vegas, California, Florida. So the NCAA didn't have a chance, really, to recruit, if you will, good players. They'll have a whole year to do that, and I think the camp will be much better. And I think that's why the coaches were so ticked, because they were forced to go out during this time only to this camp, and the talent wasn't there.
I know you don't like to get into the scandal kind of stuff, but the stuff that's going
on. I like scandal. I love scandal.
Yeah, sure you do.
In fact, I watched, isn't there a show called Scandal? I watched that.
The common sense tells you, with all the crap that came down on top of Adidas heads and paying players and all that stuff, they weren't bidding against themselves. So there had to be other people out there. And now Michael Avenatti came out with all these comments about Nike and some schools alleged there. Do some shoes fall for the Nike schools? Are we waiting for a shoe to drop for the Nike schools, too, in this? What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, from what I read, and you can only go by what other people are saying, I don't know what schools were involved. I didn't see any schools mentioned in that. It was more, Nike with players. And my understanding from reading that is that all grassroots programs, Adidas, Under Armour, and Nike, they pay money to support teams. They have to. That's how their teams get to function. They get to travel, stay in hotels, eat food, get on planes. So my understanding is the money that you're reading about, that was for travel teams. I don't think that was for individuals. Now, I could be mistaken, but that's my understanding of that. And I didn't notice any college programs. So, for example, if something was to be wrong between Bol Bol and say Nike, then Oregon would obviously have to get some sort of penalty for that, because that player would be considered receiving an extra benefit. But if those funds went to his team for travel expenses and those type of things, and then it's just normal business.
At some point, though, Paul, I mean, listen, this is, you are so much closer to this world than I am. You look at tennis players. You looked at the kid, the Freddie Adu, the soccer player that we had, that Nike gave him $1 trillion and he was like 16. All these individual sport players are getting compensated. Nobody bats an eye, but all of a sudden it's literally a federal offense if these kids are getting paid. Isn't the answer to figure out a way to let them to get paid through the shoe companies, if you want to, in a way where, it keeps a competitive playing field as level as you can for people, but doesn't make it so you're sticking your head in the sand and pretending that these kids are not worth money? Anytime you deal in non-reality, you get ridiculous outcomes. That's what we're dealing with here.
Well, you said it so well. It's not amateurism. College basketball, as college football, it's a business. So we keep talking about amateurism. Yes, they do go to class. Yes, they have to carry
you know, 12 credits each semester. Yes, they have to have a certain, you know, grade point average to continue to stay eligible. And that's all good stuff, but that doesn't make them amateurs. But the money that's being floated around legally just inside of the Yum Center. Just think of the cash cow at the end of the night in the Yum Center. The tickets, the parking, the purchase of food and alcohol. I don't know if they serve alcohol in there or not.
Oh, yeah.
They do. Okay. No, yeah. So, and then think about all the jerseys that are being sold. So it's a huge business. And then on the recruiting front, obviously people are trying to acquire talent and assets, and it's getting out of hand. But what I do love is the FBI did get involved in that scandal. And what we find out is the truth. And I think once we find out the whole truth, and then I think it's easier to move on in the profession. Will it change? I don't know. Should the players get compensation for what they do? I think we all, without speaking for everyone that's been in the game, I think everyone feels like they should get something. There's still some folks out there that says, hey, scholarship, playing on TV, you know, your image and likeness gets, you know, expanded tenfold. That's true. But there still has to be, I think, a piece of the pie for these kids, whether it comes in the short term or maybe in a longer term trust fund or a medical fund, something down the road that they can acquire later on. I hate to see money go into their hands right away. I would like to see, okay, after you've been removed from college, say you leave early or you go overseas to play or you graduate, you know, down the line funds available based on, you know, what your image, your likeness, and your sales did, something to that effect. I don't have the answer, but I do believe that compensation in some way, shape, or form should start to happen, especially now in 2022, Bob. It looks like the rule will change from high school kids going right to the pros. That will save a lot of this college recruiting scandal stuff because guys, the greatest players or the most talented players will go right to the NBA, which then there'll be another wave of recruits. Now people will say, well, people could pay for them too because they're going to be a hot commodity. Yes, they will, but they won't be lottery-type picks out of high school because those kids will probably put their name in the draft and stay there.
Yeah, good point. Paul, always great to talk to you, buddy. Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it.
All right, Bobby. Thank you.
Take care. Paul Biancardi from ESPN with us here on the V-Show on ESPN 680-1057. Hey, fantasy football fans, listen up. Do you want to join the biggest NFL season-long tournament ever? Of course you do. If you love fantasy football, and based on the numbers out there, a lot of you do, then you need to enter the $3.5 million Best Ball Championship on draft. That's right, $3.5 million in real money. It's huge. It's season-long, but with no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. You don't even have to set your lineup. Your best players get automatically started, so your team gets the best score every week guaranteed. No salary caps. It's a real-life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in a season-long league. There's no better place to play than on draft. You can draft the team anytime you want right now while we're doing this commercial. Get on and play. And I got a great deal for you right now. You can get a free entry into the Best Ball Championship when you make your first deposit if you use my promo code VSHOW. That's right, a free shot at $1 million just by using my promo code VSHOW when you make your first deposit on draft. It's available in the App Store or on Google Play or online at draft.com, and it's the highest rated fantasy app out there. It's a lot of fun. I like playing little head-to-head games each day. It gives you some rooting interest in games at night. It makes it a lot of fun, and this is a really, really cool thing where you can win yourself some real dough and have yourself a good time while you do it. Plus, you can do it for free if you make your first deposit and use our code VSHOW at draft. Go to the App Store and search draft or go to draft.com and come play for free with the promo code VSHOW. Take a short break. We'll come back as Nick's under the table. Not sure why, but I'm still going to commercial. We'll be back here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Life of a U of L basketball player at the Chris Mack Basketball Fantasy Experience. Participants get inside access to Cardinal basketball never seen before. Get elite instruction from guest coach Bill Murray, as well as basketball insights from Commissioner Jay Billis. This is your opportunity to join the Cardinal basketball family. Attend a VIP party at Chris Mack's home and compete for a championship at one of the finest basketball practice facilities in the country. Visit ChrisMackExperience.com today for all the details.
Looking for something.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Trying to determine the loudest way to clap your hands. The traditional clap is loud, kind of from the fingers in the opposite palm. The silly looking clap, like a little kid, actually is the loudest, though, if you cup your hands a little bit. No, and just do it straight. That's loud. You got to cup them, though. You got to make like a little cup and make the palms fly. That's loud.
I was determined to never stop clapping like a little kid, because I was like, how come everyone does that?
Yeah.
And then I realized it's more comfortable and it's louder.
Yeah. And then the other little kid clap, but I wish you weren't radio with a... It's like you grab one hand's grabbing the other. Like, you've ever seen that logo where the hands are all joined? That's right. How it looks like. That's how they clap. That's got a lower in tone and also a lower in volume clap. But I'm telling you, the hands absolutely facing each other like mirror images, slightly cupped. If you want to get your team's attention in practice, do that, man. Bust that thing together a few times. It's loud. It's today's advice. Got a texter who said, I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan. We're talking about Jim Thorpe, greatest athlete who ever lived. And he said, Jim Thorpe is the greatest athlete of all time. I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan, but when that list came out, they were wrong. He's alluding to a list, unfortunately, now, as I did some research, that's 10 years old. But the people at the top of the list, their careers were basically over, so you could still determine whether you agree with a lot of these rankings. It was done by a Bleacher Report in a little less than 10 years ago. It's not quite 10 years, 9 years ago. And I'll blitz through a lot of it because I want to get to the top. But I think it's interesting because some of them will jump out at you. I looked at it and I said, I think that's kind of ridiculous. ESPN Sports Science did one relatively recently where they came up with Bo Jackson as the greatest athlete of all time. I guess by his ability in baseball and football and physically documenting what he did. But what's interesting is on this list, he's way down the list. I'll go through it. Lists can be boring, but I think this is relatively interesting. Sadahara O is 50. Ronaldo's 49. 48 is Andre Agassi, which I thought was interesting. Ben Hogan's 47. Maurice the Rocket Richard is 46. Hockey player Rocky Marciano the Boxer, 45. Diego Maradona. Jerry Wist, 43. Cristiano Ronaldo's 42. LeBron James is 41. That seems very low to me, especially when you see some of the other basketball players in this stuff. Keep in mind that was way earlier in his career. Ricky Henderson is ahead of LeBron James. That's interesting. He's 40. Kobe Bryant's 39. Again, that had to be because it was 10 years ago. Very difficult to think LeBron wouldn't be much higher on a list going on today. Mario Lemieux, 38. The hockey player. Pete Sampras, 37. John Elway, 36. Albert Pujols, 35. I'd wonder about that. Reggie White, 34. Bobby Orr, the hockey. You'd be happy, Nick. A lot of hockey players here. Bobby Orr. Mike Tyson's 32. Brett Favre's 31. Bo Jackson's 30. How do you wind up one on one list and 30 on the other? And that's why I said, keep in mind.
The greatest Tecmo player of all time.
Keep in mind it's 9 years old, but these guys' careers were over, basically. So how much would the rankings change? Kareem Jabbar, 29. We're in the top 30 now. Barry Sanders, 28. Michael Phelps, 27. Joe Montana, 26. Walter Payton, 25. Pete Rose at 24. I'm sorry. Pete's a colorful guy. Great hitter. Greatest 24th greatest athlete of all time. I'd like to know, I mean, what their criteria is. Records that won't be broken or something? Deion Sanders, 23. Roger Federer, 22. Sugar Ray Robinson, the boxer, 21. Peyton Manning, 20. Ty Cobb, 19. Barry Bonds, 18. Nolan Ryan, 17.
Peyton Manning was 22?
Yeah. Lawrence Taylor, 16. Ted Williams, 15. Jerry Rice, 14. Jackie Robinson, 13. Willie Mays, 12. Tiger Woods, 11. Lance Armstrong, 10. Jim Brown, 9. Wilt Chamberlain, 8. Jim Thorpe, 7. Pele, 6. Muhammad Ali, 5. Babe Ruth, 4. Wayne Gretzky, 3. Hank Aaron, 2. And Michael Jordan, 1. I got to be honest. I mean, if you have Wilt Chamberlain on the list, how can you not have Bill Russell? If you have Willie Mays on the list, how the hell do you not have Mickey Mantle on the list? If Willie Mays is 12, I mean, and some of these other guys, that's a bizarre list. I'm sorry. Jim Thorpe's accomplishments are... the easy way to write them off is because, it was so long ago. But you're always gauged, are you not, by the dominance of your era. And so you can't blame a guy for being born in the 1800s and playing in the early 1900s, he's playing against the best of his generation. And the best of his generation was ridiculous. He won a gold medal in both the pentathlon and the decathlon in the Olympics. He played both collegiate and professional baseball, football rather. He played professional baseball. He also played professional basketball in the forerunners to the NBA. He lost his Olympic titles after it was found he'd been paid for playing two seasons of semi-pro baseball before he played in the Olympics. How sad and tragic a deal is that? It's 30 years after he died, his family was successful in getting the medals restored, but I'm sure that was small consolation to his decayed body wherever he'd buried somewhere. I mean, that's just, I understand those were the rules, but I mean, you look at what this guy did, it's unbelievable. I mean, he played for the Cleveland Indians in the Major League Baseball, the New York Giants, played for the Chicago Cardinals in what was the forerunner to the NFL, and the Canton Bulldogs. The thing is, the leagues were all forerunners to the major leagues now, except for baseball, which existed as it did today. But he was a two-time All-American. He was voted on the All-Decade team for pro football in the 20s. He was a fine baseball player. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was a two-time gold medalist in the Olympics, and it's just, it's incredible. I mean, what he accomplished in terms of relative to his peers, that's how you gauge a guy. I don't think you gauge a guy based on, I mean, nobody, you know, the big oafish kind of centers that played in the NFL, in the NBA in the early 50s, I think they'd have a heck of a time. They couldn't even guard anybody today. But they were dominant for their era. That's how you gauge them. So, it's a fascinating story. They did a movie of his life, which I must confess I've never seen. So I would actually be interested in seeing it. Burt Lancaster played him in the role. It's a remarkable life. He wound up being a coach, and as most of you know, he was a Native American or American Indian. I'm not sure how you refer to it properly anymore, but he was born near Prague, which is not European Prague. Prague is a city in southeastern Oklahoma, which is Czech immigrants founded the city, which is why they named it. But it was an Indian reservation, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Indian reservation or territory near there. So anyway, just an interesting story. Speaking of lists, we alluded to this earlier in the show, but I didn't get into it in as much detail as I would have liked. Brett McMurphy joined us, and these are not his lists, by the way, but he tweeted out the regular season over and under win totals for the betting line, for the betting website Bet Online, and these are some of the stories, some of the numbers that are worth a mention. First of all, he mentioned this during the interview. What's intriguing is, and not good for the ACC necessarily, although it won't matter if Clemson manages to win the national championship. They'll be perceived as a fine football league again. But the separation between Clemson and the rest of the ACC is more pronounced than perhaps it is in any of the other Power 5 conferences. Alabama, again, perception. Now, who knows how it plays out? We will see. But Alabama, when a projected one-loss total is 11. Georgia's is 10.5. Separation between first and second is a half a game. In the Big Ten, Ohio State is projected at 10, Michigan at 9.5, half a game separation. In the Big 12, Oklahoma 10.5, Texas 9.5, one game separation. The ACC, Clemson 11.5, Miami 8.5, three games separation between the first team and, quote, the rest of the field in the ACC. That's says something about how Clemson is regarded to the rest of the conference. Louisville comes in at over under 3.5. To be honest, if I were an odds maker, that's right where I would have put that number. I picked them to win 4 on the logic, but completely confessing to the fact that it's not confessing, it's just admitting something that others may not be willing to admit. We don't know anything yet. You have no idea how they're going to take to this new system, how much lack of talent there really is, with so much of what transpired last year because of guys basically quitting and packing it in and the coaches, and or was it really a dearth of talent? Because the question about that is this: if they win the two non-conference games early, and there's no guarantee they will, by the way, but if they do, start the year 2-1, if you believe that they are going to be improved simply because they'll be more disciplined. They'll get the coaching staff will be better. There won't be too many men on the field penalties and the problems they had with discipline and all of that. If you believe that translates into one win, I think it'll translate into two wins, because that's why I think they'll wind up that if they're good enough to win one game, then they're probably good enough to be two people. That you could say, well, that's the most ridiculous. Okay, but that's why I look at it, because I look at games and they have winnable games on the schedule based on the projection of people that look at the league. I mean, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from certain people. The rest of the league, you know, Virginia is going to be obviously very tough, but you don't even know what you're going to get out of Florida State. Florida State's over under 7.5. I have no idea. They could win 10. They could win 4. I don't think they'll win 10. But the point is that there are games where if their discipline, their better coaching, for lack of a, just to put it simply, that they the attitude is better, the enthusiasm is better, they have worked hard, they're not quitting, they just keep digging. If that's true and they can catch one team in the league, I think they can catch two. So that's why I would say, but 3.5 is dicey, and that guarantees that they, you know, take care of the two non-conference games. There's a lot of things that have to go into place even for them to get to 4, but maybe they will, and who knows? Maybe they'll be much better than we thought they were, and that number will be even higher than that.
I thought McMurphy made a really good point.
Which was?
Earlier today on the V-Show, check it out, SoundCloud, ESPNLouisville.com, and on iTunes, Brett McMurphy from Stadium said that there's a lot of emphasis on that first game with Notre Dame, but mentioned that they can't lose that game. Notre Dame can't beat them twice. They can't get their doors blown off and then stumble against, I think it's Eastern Michigan next. I thought that was a decent point, because that's, I mean, you have an opportunity game in Notre Dame. I remember us talking about that when
not much of an opportunity this year, but
well,
I get your point.
You know what I'm saying. I mean, you don't have much to lose there, but you do have something to lose in the fact that you have to leave with a little bit of dignity and not have that negative energy carry over into Eastern Michigan, a game that you should have on one of the few ones that I think you're could be penned as a favorite in. I don't mean to be snarky or facetious, but they are favored in that game as of now, right? I mean, against Eastern Michigan.
Oh, I didn't even realize this. Sorry. I was distracted. Yeah, they are favored. Yes, they're favored. But I was distracted because we are trying to take a trip today, and I did not realize that traffic outside is a complete mess. And do you know why?
Someone's coming to town, and it's not Santa.
I didn't know Trump was coming here.
Yeah, I didn't know about it until last night. I forgot about it until now.
So Trump is coming to visit Louisville, and
it's always kind of cool when the president comes to town.
So there's evidently we need to know where, because I don't want to get caught up in that.
I think it's downtown.
So we're going to we go away from that. Well, not really. We should go away from it, though. There's two ways we can get to where we're going, and one of which is we should just avoid downtown like the plague.
Yeah. Well, okay. We do have a little bit of time before we have to go.
What time are we supposed to be there?
I think like 6:30. So we don't have to leave till like 4:30. So.
Oh, not even. You can leave later than that.
Do you have any reads left? Because if not, then we should get out of here. Because I'd like to get a Sports Center in before the take. And
okay.
And I don't have a ton of time.
We're giving the prize to Birdhead Ryan for the Wednesday about the while it was a great one on the Supreme Court, that's a very worthy runner-up. Ryan, you are the winner for finding us that mascot Hall of Fame. That is, I'm telling you.
It inspired like 45 minutes of content.
Wednesday. Well, I want to go.
We want to know Wednesday.
It also inspired me to want to make a trip. I'm taking a train up there, and I'm going to find that museum. So we're definitely going to do that. But we appreciate everybody for participating. Quick comment. The other thing, and if you get a chance to listen to the interview, as Nick alluded to, I was very surprised Kentucky's one loss over under 6.5. I think that's low. I mean, you know, the SEC allows you, they play the 4 non-conference games, which I know they could lose. You talked about Eastern Michigan and Toledo, but they should hold serve against all these people. They may not win in a steamroll, but, I think that they should take care of business with their non-conference schedule. And so that's really expecting them to just lay a complete egg in conference if they don't get to 7. So I think 7 is But he said, I understand people are taking into account the fact that they still have to be made believers of with Terry Wilson, and they lost two really, really dominant players on each side of the football. But I think that's a little low. I would have made the over-under seven, basically. Make somebody make a choice between six and eight, because six and a half, I'd take the over and think I could win on seven, win on the hook there. All right, that's it for us. The Take is coming up next. It's Andy Sweeney. Unless you know something, I don't want to see tomorrow.
James Strebel.
Don't forget Friday to come and see us at Dave & Buster's and bring some new or lightly used athletic shoes. We're raising them for charity for our good friend Robbie Spear to take over with his sports reach. He brings thousands and thousands of pairs of shoes there, and we could use your help. So come out and see Mike Pratt and I there and bring some lightly used or new athletic shoes to Dave & Buster's on Friday. See you tomorrow.
With UPS, future you graduates from Metro College with zero debt. How? As a package handler, you'll have a great job while you attend Metro College, and 100% of your tuition will be covered. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at UPS.
We are ESPN Louisville, your home for the college football playoff, NFL, the Final Four, and best sports talk. Download the ESPN Louisville app today, delivered by UPS Jobs Kentucky.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.